Hey guys, welcome to Telling the Told and Untold. My name is Tsuho. August is Women's Month, so we will be continuing with our yearly series where I cover gender-based violence cases in the month of August. So if there are any particular cases that you would like me to cover this month, please just let me know down in the comment section. And before we go straight into today's case, I do have a couple of things to note. The first thing is that on this channel, we do not shame sex workers. So if you have nothing nice to say, please just keep it to yourself. And the second thing is that this case is a bit different, with just that there isn't much information about the victim and there's a lot of information about the perpetrator, his upbringing. And it's not because I don't want to focus on the victim, it's just the way that this case was unfortunately set up. Also, there are no pictures of the victim, so yeah, I'm so sorry about that. But yeah, let's go straight into it. On Sunday, the 14th of April, 2013, at around 10 minutes to 4 in the morning, a passerby was walking down on Raven Craigs Road in Woodstock in Cape Town when he came across the body of a young woman. He immediately started screaming and shouting for someone to call an ambulance, and soon the ambulance arrived. And once the paramedics looked at the young woman, they could immediately tell that she was deceased. The young woman was fully clothed and there was no blood on her clothing, but they could tell that she had been badly beaten before she died, and this was because her face was bruised and completely swollen. The officer on the scene then went to go call his superior so that they could open an unnatural death investigation, and as he was doing this, a security officer from the building across the street approached him, and his name is Morgan Ndaba. And Morgan then went to tell the police officer that just before 3 a.m. he was in his security block with one of his colleagues when they heard something that sounded like a fight. So they then went to go see what was going on, and this is when they saw a dark colored car and they saw a man, but they couldn't really see anything else. And then after a while, the man got into his car and drove off. They didn't go see what was happening or what the fight was about or who it was with, but Morgan did decide to take down a partial number plate of the car that he saw. And the number plate was 9112, but he couldn't tell whether it was WP for Western Province or NP for Northern Province, but what he could tell that it was a customized number plate. Morgan then reported the incident to his supervisor, and then he and his colleague just continued with their night shift until about 10 to 4 when the passerby had been walking past like on the street, and then they started yelling and asked for someone to call the ambulance. A little while later, they heard the man screaming, asking for someone to call an ambulance, and that's when they came out, and that's when they eventually gave the police officer the partial number plates that Morgan had written down. And they also told the police that there were CCTV cameras like by the buildings where this woman was found. So right by her, there was a building, it was called the Stock Building. There were CCTV cameras there, and also the building where they were like security guards, there was also CCTV cameras there. So Morgan basically just told the police that it was possible that the whole crime scene had been caught on CCTV footage. Once the investigating officer arrived on the scene, he realized that the woman had still not been identified. She had a handbag on her, and when they went through it, they didn't find anything that could identify her. But he did believe that she was a sex worker that was working in the Woodstock area, because at the time Woodstock was known as like the hub of sex workers. I'm not sure if it's still like that today, but in 2013 that's how it was. The day after the victim had been found, an autopsy was conducted, and it was determined that her cause of death was massive blunt force trauma to her liver. Her liver had actually been broken into two pieces, and the rest of her body also showed blunt force trauma too, including bruises and fractures. The victim also had post-mortem injuries. Because the police officer suspected that she was a sex worker, they decided to run her fingerprints through the criminal database that they had, because they thought that she might have been arrested before in her past. Police then went to the two office buildings where there was CCTV footage to ask if they could review it. And once they did, they saw the entire murder take place. So at 2:47, a dark colored car pulled up onto Ravencrates Road and stopped. And this is when a man got out of the car. He then went out of the frame for about 23 seconds and then he came back into the frame. And then afterwards, the victim appeared on the screen. The man then started punching her, slapping her, hitting her, and then she fell to the ground. And this is when he started kicking her. He jumped on her a few times and she wasn't moving. As soon as she fell to the ground, she just stopped. She was motionless. At one point, a third woman is also seen on the screen and she comes into frame and she kicks the woman who's on the floor about two times. And at 2:48, the victim is completely motionless, like she's not moving at all. The entire thing happened in literally like 1 minute, from her coming into the frame to her being kicked, slapped, everything, to falling on the ground and becoming motionless. Her murder literally happened in a minute. Afterwards, the man quickly walks away from the victim and the unknown woman then approaches him and they engage in a conversation for like a couple of seconds or minutes. And then afterwards, the man gets into his car and he drives off, leaving the unknown woman just standing there and the victim lying on the floor, still motionless. After a couple of seconds, the unknown woman also walks out of frame and she's never seen again. The times on the CCTV footage match exactly with what Morgan Ndaba said about what he had heard that night. The only other person who's seen on the CCTV footage before the passerby who found the victim was a man who was just walking down the road and he seemed to be drunk. So he was so drunk that he literally didn't see the victim lying on the floor. He just walked past her. And then the third person, or second person, that's seen on the CCTV footage was the person who found her, who started screaming and calling for an ambulance at 3:50 a.m. The CCTV footage was really grainy, so they couldn't make out the man's face or the unknown woman's face, and they couldn't see the number plate of the car. But what they could tell about the car was that it was a black Porsche Carrera 911, and they could also tell the color of the car, which was black. And because they had this and the partial number plate that Morgan Ndaba had given them, they then decided to go to all the dealerships, or like all the Porsche dealerships and car dealerships, to try and find out who had bought a black Porsche. And this is when they found the name Zweletu Mthethwa. He, alongside a bunch of other people, had bought the black Porsche, but what made him different was the fact that he was the only one who had black tires. So let me tell you about Zweletu Mthethwa. Zweletu was born in 1960 in Durban, and his parents were really well off. And growing up, he had like a really decent life. He enjoyed drawing, but it was something that he would do like on the side. He never really saw it as something that he wanted to pursue in the future. And when he was 14 years old, his parents bought him a camera, and this is when he started taking pictures of people in his neighborhood. And you could tell that he was really like gifted, he was really talented, but still it wasn't something that he just wanted to pursue full time. So after he matriculated, he went into pre-med and he didn't like it. He didn't enjoy it that much, but he still did it because, you know, like growing up, sometimes when people tell you like what you have to study, it's usually like the main things, like, oh, be a lawyer, be a doctor, you know, like no one ever says, oh, you can be an artist, you can be an actor, you know. So it was just one of those things, and you could tell that he didn't enjoy it, and he still would draw and take pictures on the side. And then one time, one of his lecturers saw one of his drawings and told him, you know what, I think you should just leave pre-med and you should go to the humanities side and you must just focus on your art. So he decided to do this. He dropped out of pre-med and then he applied and was accepted at the University of Cape Town in the Michael School of Art in the early 80s. This was still during apartheid, so he was one of two black students in the entire program, and he finally graduated in 1985, and then he was awarded a full scholarship to the Rochester Institute of Technology in New York. Then he got a graduate degree in photography, and in 1988 he returned to South Africa with his master's degree. It was very challenging for him to find work with his degree, so he decided to work in retail, and on the side he would give a couple of art lessons and photography lessons, and he kept doing this on the side, and this would eventually be a big deal, because then in 1997 some of his work was included in the second Johannesburg Vinyl, which is an international art exhibit. And after this, his photography style became renowned. He would capture ordinary people in their homes or on the streets. And after his first exhibition, he became a full-time artist, and he would work on his own stuff as well as work for other people and organizations all over the world. The Jack Shimon Gallery in New York became the primary outlet for people wanting to purchase his pieces, and he was doing really well for himself. He was making money, and it was during this time where he had a daughter. There's not much information about the relationship, anything like that, but yeah, he did have a daughter and things were just going really well for him. He managed to buy himself a beautiful house in a wealthy estate in Cape Town, and he would also spend his money in exotic clubs and on escorts, one of them being in Gugulethu, and it was known as the Corner Lounge Tavern. Because Zweletu would spend so much of his time and money in these exotic clubs and lounges and spend his money on escorts, he was so well known in that specific area or line of work. If you go to maybe a restaurant a lot or something like that, and they know you, they'll be like, oh, here comes Tsego, oh, we know your order, you know? It was that for him. They just knew him. He would come, they'd be like, oh, you know, you want your regular seat? I'm guessing that's what they would say. Maybe they wouldn't say that, but you know, he was very well known because that's the kind of life that he would live. He would also drink a lot, and he would drink so much to the point where sometimes he wouldn't be able to drive his own cars home. And because he was making so much money, a lot of men do, I hope that doesn't sound sexist, but you know, some men that are interested in cars and stuff, he would also buy a lot of high-end cars because he could afford it. And then in 2012, in December, he walked into a Porsche dealership and he wanted customizations on his Porsche Carrera 911. So as police were digging into who Zweletu Mteto was and everything like that, they finally got the results back for the fingerprints that they had put into the criminal database. And this is when, on the 20th of April, they went to Gugulethu to Eva Khumalo's house. And this is when they told her that they had found her daughter. When police ran the victim's fingerprints in the database, it came up with a hit, and it was for Nokuphela Khumalo, and she had been arrested for solicitation as well as being in possession of stolen goods. Her mother was completely shocked because her mother didn't really know what Nokuphela did or, you know, how she made money. They weren't really that close, but she never knew that her daughter did sex work. So she was completely surprised and taken back, and she was also heartbroken because, you know, her daughter had lost her life, and she hadn't heard from her daughter in a couple of weeks, but that wasn't out of the ordinary for them. They could go days and even weeks, maybe even months without speaking, but she never thought in her wildest dreams that her daughter would have lost her life. So let me tell you guys about Nokuphela Khumalo. She was born in 1990, and for the first couple of years of her life, she lived with her extended family in the Northern Cape in Kimberley until she was 8 years old. And then after that, she moved to Cape Town and stayed with her mother Eva in Gugulethu. And it was really just the two of them most of her life. They really couldn't afford to buy like bus tickets to go visit their extended family in Kimberley, so just the two of them. And as Nokuphela grew up, she became more independent. Her and her mom kind of drifted apart. They didn't really have a good mother-daughter relationship. They weren't close in any way. And once Nokuphela reached a certain age, she told her mom that she was moving out and that she was moving in with her boyfriend. Nokuphela struggled to find a job. She was unemployed for a long time. And because of this, she then decided to go into sex work just so that she could make ends meet. And she decided to work in Woodstock because Woodstock was known for sex workers. It was like a sex work area. Like if you wanted to find one, that's where you would go. And she didn't want to work in Gugulethu because she was scared that maybe, you know, she'd run into her mother or people that knew her or her mother, and they would go tell her mother what she was doing. Also, it was like a great distance away, so she knew that the possibility of bumping into someone she knew was very unlikely. So the most popular place in Woodstock for sex workers was on Victoria Road, and this was because it was one of the main roads and it was like very lit compared to the other roads in Woodstock. So the sex workers would be there and people would come, you know, their clients, customers would come. And after this, this is when they would go to the other roads in Woodstock, which weren't that well lit. And this is when they would go on with their services. And one of the roads in Woodstock was Ravens Craig Road, and this is where Nokuphela was found. After the police had gathered all of this information, they then went to Zweletu's house to go and arrest him or ask him questions. But once they got there, they realized that he wasn't home. But what they did see was a black Porsche Carrera 911 with customized number plates, which were 9112WP. They then called him up, and this is when he said that he was in America on business. Remember, like, he's an artist. He has a lot of his work in all of these galleries all over the world. So him going out of the country wasn't anything out of the norm. Like, it happened all the time. So he said that he was going to be in the States for a while and that he was going to come back on the 5th of May. He said that he wasn't going to cut his trip short because he didn't know what the police were referring to. I'm not too sure what they said to him. Maybe they said that they found a woman or they were just investigating a murder, but he just said like he doesn't know what they're talking about, so he's not going to cut his trip short for them. And you know, like, I'll see you on the 5th of May. So the police thought about getting a repatriation warrant. Oh, I pronounced it properly. So it could either be voluntary or involuntary. And from my understanding of it, is basically where they were just going to apply for this warrant and basically just force him to come back to South Africa because, you know, he's a suspect in a murder. But they decided against this because they thought that, you know, it would take too much time and too much money. So they were just going to wait for the 5th of May. And they just told him, they're like, listen, if you don't come back on the 5th of May like you told us you're going to, then you're just going to be in a lot of trouble. Records would show that right after he spoke to the police, he then called a really famous lawyer in South Africa, and his name is William Booth. William Booth is well known for taking on high profile cases, one which led to an assassination attempt on his life in 2021. You know, that's kind of the cases that he would take on. And after this, William Booth then called the investigating officer and told the investigating officer that he was not allowed to contact Zweletu directly, and that if he wanted to say anything or get any information, he had to call William Booth directly. Then on the 5th of May 2013, true to his word, Zweletu Mthethwa arrived back in South Africa, And the investigating officer was waiting there at international arrivals for him to come through those doors. But William Booth was also waiting for him too. And so they came through those doors, and immediately the investigating officer got up, went to him and put handcuffs on him and arrested him for the murder of Nokuphela Khumalo. This is when Zweletu said that he didn't know what they were talking about. He had no recollection of that night. And that was it. After this, William Booth said that they were done asking him questions, and then they took Zweletu into custody. So police wouldn't arrest Zweletu without any hardcore evidence. So they took a look at the tracking device in his Porsche, and it showed his movements from the 13th of April to the early hours of the 14th of April. And it turned out that on Saturday the 13th, he was at Corner Lounge in Gugulethu, which is one of the favorite lounges that he loved going to. And then after this, he drove to his home address in Vredehoek, where it remained for about an hour and 8 minutes. And then he left again, and then the car's engine switched off at 2:48 in Ravenscraig Road, and then it switched on again at 2:55, and then he drove back to his home in Vredehoek. And the times and locations were an exact match to the CCTV footage of this man that got out of the car and killed Nokuphela Khumalo. Damning evidence, I must say. They also did forensic tests in his car, but they didn't find any blood or fingerprints that belonged to anyone else but him. William Booth managed to push for a fast bail hearing, and by the 6th of May, after being in custody for less than 24 hours, Zweletu was released on bail for 100,000 rand. He was just out like that. News of his arrest hit headlines, and the art community was shocked, to say the least. They couldn't believe that Zweletu had been arrested for murder. And you know, like, sometimes when you talk to people, like, you hear different stories, like, people experience people differently, and it was the same for Zweletu. Like, some people said that he was kind and caring and that he could never be violent towards women, whereas other people said, oh, Zweletu, like, he definitely did it, that man is so violent. So you know, people just had different stories about him. The trial began in late 2013, and it would last for 4 years. Zweletu's defense was that he doesn't recall and that he just wasn't the man in the car. And remember, the second woman that we saw in the footage, she is still unidentified to this day, but the pathologist did say that the two places where the woman kicked Nokuphela were not fatal. And if I'm not mistaken, it was one of Zweletu's kicks that was fatal, like the blunt force trauma to her liver that caused it to rupture into two, that was the fatal kick. So she, like, what she did didn't do anything to Nokuphela, but still, you know, but they still haven't found her, so can't really do much. Zweletu Mthethwa was finally found guilty and sentenced to 18 years for the murder of Nokuphela Khumalo, and he will be eligible for parole in 2029, which is in 6 years. It's just now. And if you thought that was it, it's not. Well, it is, but it's not. So during the trial and after Zweletu was convicted, there was a lot of, like, controversy just going around, especially in the art community. So a lot of people wanted all of Zweletu's paintings and pictures to be taken down and be replaced with a painting of Nokuphela. I'm not too sure who painted this painting, but it's a painting of her mugshot. So did I mention, like, I think I forgot to mention it, but there's literally only one picture of Nokuphela, and it was of her mugshot. So someone had painted this, and they just wanted that to replace all of Zweletu's paintings, everything, all of the galleries all around the world. And a lot of people were against this. A lot of people said no, like, it has nothing to do with his work, so why do you want to replace it? And a lot of galleries, I don't say a lot, I think all of the galleries basically just said no to this, and they still kept all of his artwork, but instead of it being in front so everyone can see it, they kind of, like, put his stuff towards the back where it was less likely to be seen, but it was still it was still there for people to go see it if they wanted to. And they also removed his name from the list of main artists to a lesser known list. But like, his work is still out there for everyone to see and everything. And a lot of people just had a lot of opinions about it, about him still being up there. You know, I don't want to say cancel culture, but you know, like something like that, where people were just like, why are you guys still giving this murderer a platform? He murdered an innocent sex worker. And yeah, that's it. His work is still up. He is still in prison. And yeah, that's it for today's case. Thank you guys so much for watching. Please let me know what you guys think, whether you think all of his artwork should still be up, if you think his artwork should be down and that he shouldn't be benefiting financially, even though like he is a convicted killer. Please let me know all your thoughts and opinions. Please don't forget to let me know any cases you would like me to cover this month. And yeah, I'll see you guys next week.